In life, she worked alongside Hollywood celebrities on movies you've probably seen. In death, she was found rolled up in a carpet in a shed, discarded by a young stranger who tried to blame her for her own tragic ending. This is the story of Pina Ritzy, the hairstylist to the stars, whose family waited patiently for her cold case to be solved. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here, and hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. I stumbled onto today's case while researching another one, and I had to stop when I saw a photo of the victim with singer David Bowie. He's one of my all-time favorites because I grew up watching the movie Labyrinth, where he plays the villain, but you kind of forgive him because of his giant hair and tight pants. Anyway, our story begins when the victim's 18-year-old niece got a call from her uncle. He said simply, "They've killed her." He wanted to speak to the girl's parents, but they were away on vacation in Jamaica. He couldn't answer any of her questions, only screamed that his sister, Jessupina Pina Ritzy, was dead. The niece likened his wailing on the phone to that of a wounded animal. The way it struck her is so primal. She called her parents at their resort and left a message for them to call her back. When her mom returned the call, it was up to this girl who had only just graduated from high school to tell her mom that her sister had been killed. 47-year-old Pina was found dead on August 4, 2009, just outside the center of Montreal, Canada. It was raining, and a homeless man just wanted to find someplace dry to lie down. Behind an old, unused commercial garage, he found a shed with an unlocked door. He thought he'd hit the jackpot, but then he smelled the stench that cops call unmistakable, decaying flesh. This time, it was mixed with the scent of a fire. When he saw the rolled carpet in the back and the small feet poking out of it, he thought he had found a child, but she was just a petite woman. Her niece called her delicate. But that's not the word I would use. To me, she sounds more like a badass. Pina's family had come to Canada after World War II devastated Italy and its economy. Pina was born in 1962 to Concetta Liberto and Umberto Ritzy. She lived in New York City and Los Angeles. She made a legacy for herself as a hairstylist and makeup artist for Hollywood celebrities and global fashion shows. Friends say she wasn't just anybody, she was a star. Pina worked on movies like Taking Lives with Angelina Jolie and Ethan Hawke, and Lucky Number 7 with Bruce Willis and Morgan Freeman. She had moved to Montreal only 4 months before her death to continue building her reputation back in her home country. Her family said she had such a perpetual wandering spirit that after her murder, they spread some of her ashes around the world wherever they went in tribute. Pina's family gathered in Montreal after her death and met with two detectives who told them everything they knew, but asked that some of it be kept quiet. Pina's niece, the one who took the first phone call about her murder, says the officers were disturbed by how physically brutal the crime was, and that affected her. You know it's bad when the professionals can barely talk about it. When her dad had to go identify the body, he knew it was Pina from the jaguar hip tattoo she was famous for, but her face was so badly mangled that authorities had to do a DNA test just to be sure. A chunk of concrete had been used to smash her head, face, and neck, effectively erasing her features. Her skull was fractured by four of these blows, and a pathologist called her face and neck one immense bruise. Injuries to her hands and arms showed that she had fought off her attacker and suffered through what must have been an excruciating ordeal. The clothes she had been wearing before the attack, a white shirt and white pants, were almost completely red from the blood. Her pants were wrapped around her neck. Wood had been placed on the carpet, but it had failed to really catch fire. There was some evidence left behind by the killer at the crime scene, and really good evidence at that. Fingerprints were found in the shed where the body was discovered, and DNA had been left on some chewing gum and a cigarette. But sadly, there was no match in the system. The detectives assured the family that they wouldn't let the case go cold, though. They said they were taking this one to heart. And then in March 2013, 4 years later, there was a break, a match. The man had been arrested when he issued a death threat to his wife, and authorities got a hit on his fingerprints and DNA. His name was Jean-Philippe Tremblay, born May 10, 1989. He was Mexican by birth, but had been adopted along with his three-year-old sister at a young age. Jean-Philippe had been a soldier in the Canadian Armed Forces at the time of Pina's death, and crucially, just a few months later, another woman claimed he'd tried to kill her. He lived on a nearby base when Pina was murdered, but moved to a little town north of Quebec City, near where he was raised, when he quit the service. He had three or four children, depending on the source, and was undertaking vocational training. Pina's family didn't recognize him. He wasn't a friend of Pina's, nor anyone they'd ever seen at all before. He was charged with first-degree murder. 28-year-old Jean-Philippe finally went to trial in May 2017, and his defense was self-defense. He claimed he was not guilty, but there were hours of taped confession for the jury to view, and it looked bad for Jean-Philippe. At first, he claimed to have never heard of Pina at all, claimed he had never been in Montreal. He swore on the lives of his daughters. He looked at a picture of Pina and said, "You can't forget eyes like that." But the detective in the video kept poking holes in his story until Jean-Philippe was forced to admit guilt. He said it was her fault he had to kill her because she dragged him into the shed. His story was that he was wandering through downtown Montreal, lost after some of his comrades had left him in a strip club while he was in the bathroom. Pina had been out with friends for the first time since moving to Montreal and had a couple of beers at Club Saphir. Her friends were ready to go home, but the night was still young for Pina, who stayed out with three men she had just met. When Jean-Philippe happened upon her, Pina was standing outside of an after-hours club. I had to look up what an after-hours club is, and apparently the idea is that it's the place you go to once the bars are legally required to close. In the U.S., they started out as places for the ne'er-do-wells to play their ragtime music and cut a rug in the 1800s when that wasn't the moral thing to do. There's apparently a famous one in Montreal called Stereo, where the lower-level bar closes at the required time, and that's when the techno and house music gets started on the second floor. Maybe this is where Pina Ritzy met Jean-Philippe Tremblay that night. It's only a 25-minute walk from the Stereo Club to Notre Dame Street East and the shed behind the old garage where she was found. Jean-Philippe said they met outside the club and took a walk through the city, just talking. Then Pina came on to him and suggested the shed as a place where they could have some privacy. This seems super weird to me, like, I don't know any woman who would consider an abandoned shed romantic, and why did she even know about this garage and its unlocked shed in the first place? But a security camera seemed to show her willingly entering the shed with him around 6 a.m. on August 2nd. She was nearing 50, and he was a young soldier in his 20s, so maybe this was all about excitement for her. Jean-Philippe admitted that he couldn't get it up inside the shed, and Pina made fun of him, calling him a f***ing loser. He said he just wasn't attracted to her in the moment, that she was very pretty, but the situation was uncomfortable. So he went outside to smoke, and that's when she forced him to come back. He says he had to hit her when she dragged him into the shed, and fear took over then, and he can't remember anything else, that it was an accident. Jean-Philippe didn't know that there was a CCTV camera nearby, recording everything. The footage, of course, shows him doing the dragging. Jean-Philippe also said that he covered up the windows in the shed when they got there, but he actually did that 2 hours after he must have killed Pina. And then at some point, he wrapped her in a carpet and tried to burn her almost naked body. He was there with her corpse for 5 hours, leaving occasionally to search for things to bring back to the shed. The jury saw the terrifying surveillance footage from the scene that showed even more of the story. It showed Pina walking away from the shed and Jean-Philippe coming up behind her and dragging her back inside. It sounds like something from a horror movie, the boogeyman pulling the helpless girl backward into the bedroom closet. She was that close to escaping. Pina's niece said Jean-Philippe would make eye contact with her often in court, but that he would always look away first. She said that felt like a victory. She called him a pathetic villain, meek and small. Before the sentencing, Pina's sister was allowed to read a victim impact statement. She said that Jean-Philippe had killed her sister, but he also killed Pina's brother, too. The brother had encouraged Pina to take off that night and have some fun, and he never recovered from the guilt he felt. He died of a heart attack 5 years after her death. The jury had to decide between first-degree murder, second-degree murder, and manslaughter. The prosecutor asked for first-degree because of the sexual nature of the assault. She said that even if Pina had supposedly made the initial advances, consent was retracted when she left that shed. Jean-Philippe's attorney asked for manslaughter, admitting that his client had killed Pina, but that she had insulted him, and he couldn't even really remember what had happened after that. The jury deliberated for 2 days, and then on June 16, 2017, Jean-Philippe Tremblay was found guilty of first-degree murder and was sentenced to life. He appealed in 2019, but it was dismissed. He'll be eligible for parole after 25 years. In his statement to the friends and family of Pina Ritzy, he said, "I'm sorry I destroyed your family and your friend. I am sincerely sorry for what happened. I hope one day in the future you can feel less pain."
So happy. And again, I want to thank the detectives, Ian Riddle and Daniel Degagny and Maitre Perro. They did an amazing job.
Yeah.
And I'm just so happy and relieved that justice was done. It won't bring Pina back, but at least justice was done. Yeah. And hopefully she saved other people from being hurt.
Yes. Exactly.
Because this guy came across as somebody extremely dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, that's, there's so much violence in this person that he cannot be outside in the society. He just cannot.
While researching this case, I came across the picture of the shed at the very end. I had pictured it as this dark, rotting thing surrounded by discarded car parts, made up of gray boards with holes in them, spider webs, and dirt everywhere. But seeing the photo, it reminds me of a playhouse my cousins had growing up, a tiny home, white and clean and bright. It makes it more believable to me that a hairstylist to the stars would be willing to go inside, but it somehow makes it sadder, too. Apparently, murders only happen in dank, cave-like sheds, not kids' playhouse sheds, in my mind. Friends want Pina Ritzy to be remembered as a special, unique person, not just someone they found rolled up in a carpet. As always, I'd love to know your thoughts on this case. Do you think Pina was just caught up in the excitement of the moment when she saw the shed, or am I the only one not taking my liaisons to sheds? Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.